Now, back in June, Dr. Emma Byrne came in to talk about the testosterone dip and men's fertility issues. So this week, when we asked listeners about their own men's health issues, loads of you got in touch about certain things. So he's here now to answer your questions. Thanks for coming in again, Emmett. How are you?
Yeah, really good, Jennifer, really good.
Okay, let's get to it. I know you have a lot to say on this, so let's kick off with it. Somebody messaged in and said, I want to know your thoughts on this. If your dad has had a heart attack at 44, what are the risk factors? When should you get checked, etc., etc., etc.? What do you think about that?
Okay, so it obviously, age is the best predictor of anything, but when you have somebody who's had a heart attack at 44, that would indicate a family risk. Anything below, really the age, I think, of 60, to be honest, 60, 65. But you have to factor in things like, was his dad, in this case, mm-hmm. smoking and so on and so forth, which would increase their risk as well. But even at 44 with smoking, you consider that a family risk. Okay, so it's important then to make the distinction between what you need to do is get checked out, obviously. Now, when you go into a GP, typically they'll look at what we call risk factors. So the current model is a disease risk model in terms of you look at risk factors for disease. Now, it's important to make the distinction between risk factors and actual disease that is present.
Okay.
So the key, so let's look at the three diseases you're most likely to die from in Ireland, if you like, if you're a non-smoker. There's an 80% chance risk you're going to die of one of either. Number one is a vascular event, stroke, heart attack. Number two is a form of cancer. Number three is a form of dementia. Okay, now vascular disease and dementia travel together, as in what you do environmentally that drives one will certainly drive the other. What you do to prevent one will certainly prevent the other.
Okay.
Cancer has a slightly more genetic component to it. So when you look at disease risk, okay, you have two sides of the equation. You've got your environment, which is your behaviours on a day-to-day basis, and you have your genetic risk.
Okay? Okay.
When you take a population then with genetic risk, you're looking at outliers. You have your poor unfortunate soul that no matter what they do in life, they're going to get disease early. That's the genetic risk, high genetic risk. They're quite rare. And then on the other flip side of that, you've the 95-year-old guy or girl smoking 40 Woodbine a day and drinking two bottles of whiskey, and they're bulletproof. Okay, so that both of those are quite rare. The mm-hmm. middle ground is where most
the majority
are,
where we
and
sit.
What they yeah. do in the environment is very, very important. Okay, so let's say you have a family risk. Okay, so then you go in to get checked. There's a kind of we call the three, if you like, the holy trinity of what's going to, you know, going to most likely show up early with respect to some form of disease, particularly vascular disease. So the three things that when a GP measures bloods and does blood pressures and stuff like this, look, these are measuring for risk factors, disease. What they're looking at is, they'll obviously measure your blood pressure. They'll look at your full blood count, your liver function, renal function, maybe your bone profile, iron studies, your what we call metabolic panel. That's a risk of diabetes and so on. And then your cholesterol and maybe a few other things like mm-hmm. Ferritin and other. The point of the matter is that the three that seem to go off the quickest, the canaries in the mine, are your blood pressure, your cholesterol, and your metabolic panel. Okay, that's your risk for diabetes, and these are very important to understand. Okay, so I think that again, these are risk factors. So based on those numbers, you'll be categorized into low, moderate, high risk. And then, of course, with the history as well, and maybe an exam, which will add in a few bits more information. Now, you're managed accordingly then. Low risk, see in a year's time. Moderate risk, you're probably going to be monitored closely every couple of weeks, months. And then high risk, it's either medication, referral, and so on.
Okay?
So now that doesn't look at functional health, okay, which is how fit you are, how strong you are, how well you function, say, in the bedroom and all that sort of thing. That correlates far more strongly with quality of life, and it's important to that these things do have an overlap. But that's not what's going to be looked at when you go in, you know, for a standard test.
Okay.
So I'll just make that distinction as well. So the important thing is to understand how these things work in relation to and what they actually mean. So blood pressure is an important one, because if your blood pressure is high, I'll just make this point again,
yeah,
moderately high versus being very high. Very high, you're just going to have to do something quickly. But again, it's quite rare. But a lot of people go around with moderate, with a little bit of what, you know, type 1 hypertension, we call it, maybe just under type 2, which is like a 140 type picture, if you like, over, say, 85, 90 in terms of the lower number. Okay, mm-hmm. The top number is the pressure in the arterial system when the heart is contracting. And the lower number is the pressure in the arterial system when the heart is refilling. Okay, one is called systolic, one is called diastolic. Now, the issue here is that if your blood pressure is moderately high, okay, now when your blood's traveling through the bloodstream, they're arterial branch points, meaning that there's little branches that go off on in from the artery, the main arteries, if you like, you know. When the blood pressure is high, it's turning into these arteries and it's hitting the wall, if you like, on the branch point at a slightly higher velocity than it should be. And it is little cells that line the arterial wall. It's a mono layer of cells, a single layer of these things called endothelial cells that are very sensitive. Mm-hmm. Now, if you hit them with higher pressure, you create shear force, sideways force across the arterial wall. Now, think of the heart's pumping thousands of times a day and it's slightly higher pressure than it should be over that thousands of times a day. Now, blood pressure does fluctuate, but I'm talking about on an average, it's high. So it hits off this slightly higher than it should each time, thousands of times a day. And you add it up over days, months, weeks, or days, weeks, months, years, then it's like an erosion, if you like, you know, and there's damage done, and that leaves you vulnerable. That's how blood... So it's important that we look at this and monitor and keep it stable, okay? That's just blood pressure.
Can I ask you, though? Yeah. So if you have... if it's hereditary or if you have a family history of problems vascular at a very early age, are you saying, you know, your day-to-day life will have an effect on your risk, could change you from being moderate to high risk to low risk?
It's a very good point. I suppose I'm building this up to get to that, but the issue is sometimes you just need to have intervention if you're very, very high risk. Okay, some people will have a family risk, but what I'm going to do is build this picture first. You're looking at that one, blood pressure is one risk factor that we'll focus on. Okay, I've kind of explained that. Mm-hmm. The second one is cholesterol. Now, this is a bit of a deep dive. So cholesterol is relatively, I think, you know, poorly understood. I think, you know, when you look at a cholesterol panel, you're looking at different measurements. Total cholesterol, a cholesterol called LDL, low density lipoprotein. That's called bad cholesterol. It's not actually bad cholesterol. That keeps cholesterol in the system to do its job. Cholesterol has a role. It fixes cell membranes, its lipids, its fats. The outer layer, the membrane of cells, are made of fats and it's used to repair them. It also makes our sex hormones like testosterone and stuff. If it's low, there's a problem as much as if it's high.
Okay.
Now, it's important to understand that this is very genetic. So cholesterol is about 70-80% determined by your genes. Okay, mm-hmm. And this is something where a person with a family risk may need to be, you know, may need medical intervention with this in terms of medicines and stuff like this. If it's very, very high, you can only modify it lifestyle wise by about 20-30%, which is worth doing. But it's not going to fix a major problem. Okay, so with respect to that, you've got the LDL, which is the one that keeps it in the system. You've got the HDL, which is high density lipoprotein, and that's responsible for a thing called reverse cholesterol transport. That takes cholesterol out of the system through the liver and reduces the loading. We call that good cholesterol, and that needs to be kind of relatively up, not down, if you like. Mm-hmm. Then you have a thing called triglycerides. And triglycerides are kind of like fats that are carried through the bloodstream. They're usually converted through the liver from things like carbohydrates and sugars and stuff like this. Now, these are very important. If they're high, that's a major problem. So let's just break it down now, okay? So if you're really, really high, let's just keep it simple, then, you know, in terms of total cholesterol or LDL cholesterol, you do need to step in. But just to put it in context, your LDL cholesterol carries a hazard ratio. Now, I'm going to explain this, of 1.3, which means that in a year, if you take somebody with high LDL versus somebody who doesn't have high LDL, they have a 30% chance higher. Hazard ratio 1.3 means that 0.3, 30% higher of having something happen or something, you know, bad happening in a sense. But if their triglycerides is high, it's a 1.8 hazard ratio. Okay, now the statins and things that we take tend to have an effect on the LDL, not on the triglycerides. Triglycerides is very much lifestyle in many ways.
Okay.
See, it's harder to modify the cholesterol. So it's important to understand that. So when I look at a cholesterol panel, the most important thing is triglycerides and HDL, okay, and then the ratio of them. So when you divide, say, the HDL into the triglycerides, that should be one or less, okay? That means that if your HDL is low and your triglycerides are high, you're dividing a low into a high number, you're going to have high number, and that means that's the highest probability you're going to lay down atherosclerosis. Plaques. Okay. Now, I've gone into a fair bit of detail.
You have. But, you've gone into a huge amount of detail there.
But I
know what LDL is now.
What I'm trying to say is that you can. It's very hard to modify the LDL. You can modify triglycerides by modifying your quality of your food. Okay. That's
okay.
Important.
Yeah. Now, so just in layman's terms, because it is quite difficult to follow as well if people are listening at home. Yeah. So I'm just thinking about my husband. So he's a very fit guy. Yeah. Works out all the time. Sure. 41 years of age. He has high cholesterol. He's been told he has to keep an eye on it. Mm. So it is How does he do that? Oh, is lifestyle, I mean, is looking after your diet, taking the Benecol, other ones, other brands are available, it's the only one I know right now. Yeah. You said he can reduce that by 20%.
Yeah, so lifestyle would be nutrition, okay? So it's important, and then to understand that reducing kind of inflammation in the body, which is related to your good behaviours, okay? So I would say plant-based diet with a little bit of animal protein, small amount, is your best bet, okay?
Okay.
Keeping that really simple. If you're reading products, like ingredients and stuff like that, minimize it, okay? So you should be taking stuff from the fresh, perishable foods, okay? That's the best thing you can do from the point of view. And vegetables, salads, that sort of thing is your best bet if you're trying to reduce your risk. But it won't, if he's very high, take him down into a space that would be considered quote-unquote normal from say, a what would be a lab value, but if he's very high. Now, the thing is that, but his triglycerides will come down because they're generally converted from the liver, which need to be supplied by the nutritional cycle. So if
that's diet, that's nutrition.
That's nutrition,
and
yeah.
So what about exercise? Would that play a role?
Exercise 100% plays a role. Okay, now it goes back then to at a kind of a cellular level in relation to the driver, precursor to cholesterol going up, and say, for example, blood pressure is going up and metabolic panels going off is a process called oxidative stress and inflammation. This is where exercise plays a big part. So when you overload a cell, say with poor nutrition, okay, you drive these free radicals that I'm sure you've heard of. And free radicals, when they go high, drive a process called oxidative stress, which is like rusting, okay? So that's the aging and accelerated aging of cells. So what happens is that triggers an immune response, which drives low-level inflammation, and this in turn drives your cholesterol, blood pressures, and your insulin resistance. So the precursor we're not looking at. So to take the pressure off the cells, when you cycle the cell faster, that's your exercise, that's your movement, you decompress the cell and then you reduce your exposure to oxidative stress inflammation. So
so
that's kind of the answer to that. But let's just jump straight to the point with someone with a high risk, okay?
Yeah.
So you've got your, say you've high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and just take them two, for example, from a family risk point of view. The important thing for a person who's young, relatively young, say 30, over 30, with a family risk, is to look at the risk factors, which will give you an idea. But you don't necessarily have disease present with high risk factors. So I could have high blood pressure and have no disease present.
Sure.
So the step for important thing for someone with a high family risk is at a certain age, maybe over the age of 30, is to get a scan. Okay. So a scan, there's two types. There's a CAC, that's called a coronary artery calcification scan, which gives you a number. If that number is not zero, then you have something there. Okay. And now then it's relevant to how much the big the number is and then determines and how much disease is present. The better scan is a thing called a CTA, which is CTCA, which is a CT coronary angiogram, which actually looks at the vessels. It's a non-invasive exam. It's just an imaging, but it looks at the vessels and gives you, is there disease present or not? That's binary. So you have, it's there, it's not there. If it's not there, even with high risk factors, you have an insurance policy of about a decade. Okay. Now it doesn't give you a lifetime insurance policy, but it's about, but you have to, it's not a license to push the nuclear button and go nuts on life and start smoking and stuff.
But I hear you.
It's important. But what it does is, with someone with a family risk, they should get that done and find out if there's disease
present.
Get a
scan.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that gives you a binary answer. Okay. And then when you have that, then you're much better, obviously, positioned.
You have
to make
a better
decisions.
Picture.
Yeah. And then if you have disease present, you go on what we call optimal medical therapy, which manages that. Okay. So anyone with disease present, it's the importance. When you think of a blocked artery, okay, we think of the extent of the blockage as being the problem. It's not really. It's the stability of that plaque that's important. Okay, so when if an artery is blocked 50%, that's not a good thing. But we would consider, 50% blockage, that's the end. If that plaque that surrounds that, you know, there's a little crust on that plaque. If it's stable, then the body can actually create collateral pathways that will basically adapt to that in a slow fashion. Now, the problem, you could have a 20% blockage, which in theory sounds less, were not as bad as a 50%, but if the plaque is unstable and it ruptures, the internal part of the plaque itself touches off the blood and creates a biochemical reaction that blocks the artery completely, very quickly, that doesn't allow the body to adapt. And that's what causes the heart attacks.
Okay, so, I just want to bring you on to, because we have time for one more question, and this, it'll tie into all of this. And I hear this all the time, maybe because I'm in my 40s, but somebody texts in saying, I'm in my 30s and my pal at work, who is really healthy, gets his bloods done all the time. Now, you were talking about getting scans done. What about getting your bloods done? Do you think over a certain age, people should be regularly getting bloods done? This person says, it seems like a waste of time and money for me, especially I'm fairly young. But what does Dr. Byrne think? What do you think about getting the bloods done?
It's a good question. So get your bloods done at 30. Get a baseline. Okay. So it's important, I think, to get
at 30.
Yeah, it's fine. Just get a baseline. A baseline gives you a level, okay, that you work with at a relatively young age when technically you would not be running into any major problems. Most people, let's say, right? So once you have that baseline and it's normal and it's all within, it's all good, I wouldn't be worried for maybe 5 years, maybe, and do it every 4 to 5 years. Over the age of 40, you'd probably be thinking maybe to do it a little bit more regular. But if something turns up at the age of 30, then it gives you the opportunity to follow it. It also gives you another opportunity to look at velocities. Now, this is important that I think it's not really that well maybe talked about, or not, it's not a factor. But if I have a blood pressure of 120 over 80 at 30, and then I know that, or I'm just using blood pressure as an example. Mm-hmm. It's probably not the best because it fluctuates, but let's just say, to simplify, I'll use it. So say at 35, I have a blood pressure of 128 over 84. That would still wouldn't indicate anything major going on, but the velocity is going in the wrong direction. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't know that if I didn't know my baseline at 30. So I know where I was when I was in a very good state. Now I know that I'm going in the wrong direction. I can reel that in. That's a better place to be in. So it gives you a kind of something to work
with. A baseline.
With.
Yeah. A baseline.
So I think at 30, it's reasonable getting a baseline. If everything is good, I wouldn't be necessarily going in every year, but maybe going in every couple of years just to see the velocity. And then that's not a bad thing to do with the risk factors I mentioned, which would be obviously your blood pressure, your cholesterol levels, and your metabolic panel insulin resistance picture. Now, it's important to, I could talk all day on that alone, but it's important they're the three things that will go off the earliest.
I can't wait to go into my GP at the end of the month and tell him I want to check my velocity. I'll sound so smart. It'd be amazing.
That's a term I use. I'm not sure what the GPs think.
I get it, but it's interesting to hear. You know, we need to have a baseline. I think the message is, and you said it last time you were in, is your day-to-day living will affect your health massively, and getting yourself checked and early detection is key. So get your bloods done. If there is a family history of heart problems, go and get your scan. You said a CT scan, a CTC?
CTCA.
CTCA. Yeah, go and have your scans done, because they will give you a baseline and see where you're at and see if there's anything there. Get yourself checked if there is a family history, or if you have any concerns, or if you're over 30. Basically, everybody get checked. Dr. Emmett Byrne, thank you so much. Dr. Emmett Byrne will come in again. If there's anything specifically, I know we talked about fertility the last time and we talked about general health today. If there's anything specifically you would like to talk about, you can get in touch on 51552. Jen Zamparelli on RTE 2FM.